Hey everybody, Elizabeth here. Before we get into today's episode, I wanted to make sure that you know registration is currently open for our Spring Strong Foundations cohort. Strong Foundations is a 5-week strength building program brought to you by me and Morgan Bungers. Coach Morgan Bungers is one of the best, most effective strength training coaches in this country. He has worked with some of the most elite athletes in the world, and now he specializes working with people in their 40s, in their 50s, in their 60s who want everyday strength. And this is not about being able to push your suitcase into the overhead compartment on an airplane. We need to be consistently and effectively strength training if we want to maintain the strength of our immune system. Muscle is a critical part of our immune system, and if we are not actively maintaining our strength, we are losing it as we age, and that means we are losing the strength of our immune system. It's also a significant component of our overall metabolism, especially our carbohydrate metabolism. Muscle mass plays a huge role in energy, in mood, mental health, bone health, so many different things. This is just not optional, but a lot of us don't do it because we aren't sure what to do. We aren't sure what not to do. We aren't sure if we're moving well. We don't know how to accommodate for our physical limitations or our current level of fitness, and that is why you need a coach, and you'd be hard-pressed to find one better than Morgan Bungers. Now, here's the thing about fitness programs. I've experienced this. My mom, who's in her 70s, has experienced this, where you buy a fitness program and then you're like, okay, but I can't do that workout because I'm not fit enough, or I don't have enough balance, or I don't have that equipment, or that hurts my knees, or it hurts my back. And then you're sort of just left to figure it out yourself, which means we often don't do anything. The great thing about Strong Foundations is that Morgan and I are part of it every single day, and you have an unlimited ability to ask us questions in a group setting or via direct message so that Morgan can help you scale for you, for whatever equipment you have, for the time that you have, for your fitness level, for your body and your physical limitations. 5 weeks. There's two different tiers. There's a beginner intermediate tier. There's an intermediate advanced tier. The testimonials that we have received from our previous clients will blow your mind. You can check them out and also register for your spot by going to primalpotential.com/strongfoundation. primalpotential.com/strongfoundation. If you are an alum, if you have been through Strong Foundations before, I've already emailed you a renewal link with a special renewal rate, so please use that. If you don't see that email, let me know. For the rest of you, primalpotential.com/strongfoundation. We start on May 13th, so grab your spot now. You will have these workouts for life. 4 workouts a week for 5 weeks, 2 different tiers. So you've got 40 workouts total. Plus, there is a 5-part series on your pelvic floor. That is an incredibly important part of your physical fitness, of your strength, of your core strength, of your overall health, of your ability to maintain functional mobility as you get older. We want you to be a part of this. You will not regret joining the Strong Foundations cohort. It is an incredible community. Everybody needs to be consistently and effectively strength training. And if you're not, it's probably because you don't know how to make it work for you. And it can be made to work for you. It needs to be made to work for you. primalpotential.com/strongfoundation to register now. Let's get into the episode. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Primal Potential Podcast. I am Elizabeth Benton. Thanks so much for joining me today. We are going to get tactical and strategic around reducing your sugar consumption if that is a goal for you, especially strategies if you are somebody who turns to any type of food when you're stressed, when you're overwhelmed, if you're feeling tired. That was certainly a pattern for me. And I shared on a couple of recent episodes how I'm not currently eating sugar. And for the sake of clarity, though I know I've said this before, that's not a forever thing. It's a for now thing. I could have sugar tomorrow. I don't have a defined endpoint. I don't have this pre-designed plan. It's just what feels good for me for right now. And in response to a couple of episodes where I walked through those details and what that means to me and the results that I'm experiencing from it, I got a question from a listener around whether or not I gave it up cold turkey. Did I just stop eating sugar cold turkey? And did I have any symptoms from it? And then I got another handful of questions around how. Like, how are you dealing with cravings? How are you dealing with temptation? How are you dealing with urges? And those are all such really important topics, because even if you are reducing your intake and not just going without it as I am for now, that's a very real thing. If you decide you're not going to drink alcohol and then you go to a party and somebody offers you a drink, we come up against this same thing over and over and over. Maybe it's not sugar, but it is something else. So the first thing that I want to talk about is, you know, did I go cold turkey and did I have any symptoms? But the second part of this episode, I think, is going to be the most important part, where I talk about my strategies and my approach for when it feels hardest, when I don't want to do the work, when I don't want to follow through, and what my go-to responses are in those moments, which certainly happen. There certainly are those times when I just want to indulge. And a lot of them are times when I'm tired or when I'm stressed or when I'm emotional or, you know, when all those three things come together, especially. But first things first, did I go cold turkey? And the answer is yes, but. Yes, but. This for me, going without sugar presently, but not permanently, is 12 years into an ongoing commitment to be healthier. And certainly there have been periods within that 12 years where I was more consistent and or more strict with what I was eating or not eating. But overall, this is 12 years into a very significant focus of my life. Nutrition and health has been a big focus of my life over that period of time. And so if we were to look at what I was eating 12 years ago compared to what I'm eating now, it doesn't represent a huge degree of change, though it is a degree of change. So if somebody is going cold turkey, I'm just not going to have sugar anymore starting today, from where I was at 12 years ago, that's probably going to be a much bigger feat than somebody who says, you know what, I think I'm good with this for now. I'm certainly good with this for today, if they're regularly not having sugar. So I did just decide one day I'm not going to have sugar, and then I kept going, but I have not been a sugar binger in quite some time. So I was cutting out sugar on a whim after 12 years of eating pretty clean a lot of the time. Again, that's very different from cutting out sugar if you're having sugar on a very regular basis. If I had done this 12 years ago, it probably would have looked a lot like a yo-yo extreme, but that's not what it looks like now. And then the second part of that first question was, have there been any symptoms for you when you cut out sugar? And absolutely. Increased energy, increased mental focus, my ability to stay focused and focus more for longer has been tremendously improved. Better sleep, dramatically less anxiety, fewer cravings, more controlled hunger. Hunger doesn't seem to pop up as much or as intensely. My mood has been better. My patience with my kids has been improved, though still continues to be tested. I've felt more mental clarity, and sometimes for me that feels like more drive. I felt a little more driven. Improved workout performance, better skin. But honestly, there has not been anything negative. Now, part of that is just my perspective. Do I experience cravings? Yeah, I do. Does it sometimes feel challenging? Yeah. But that's the case even if I am eating sugar, right? That those kinds of feelings or temptations or whatever are not just present because I'm not currently eating sugar. So the reason that I say part of that factor for me and why there haven't been any negatives, part of that is my perspective around I don't see cravings as a problem. I don't experience a sugar craving and all of a sudden feel powerless. I used to. So if you are at that place, I get it. It's not so much that my behavior shifted that sense of powerlessness. It's my perspective did. And here's how that perspective changed for me, where I don't freak out or feel overcome or feel out of my power if I have a sugar craving. I realized, and I don't know why it took me so long to realize this, but I don't think I'm the only one because I deal with clients in their 50s and 60s and 70s who get very overwhelmed when they experience an intense sugar craving. What I realized is a craving is an urge, right? Of varying intensities, but I have urges that I don't act on all the time. I have urges to scream at the top of my lungs at my kids, but I don't. I certainly do yell at my kids sometimes, but in those moments where I'm clenching my teeth and I want to absolutely lose my top, I don't. I have the urge, but I don't act on the urge because I understand that there are consequences to that. I understand that I have more control than that urge does. Or I have the urge on a regular basis to be snarky to somebody on the phone or in line at a store or in my inbox. And I'm not. I'm just not, because I understand that though I have that urge, I've practiced control enough to know that it's just a fleeting feeling and I would regret it afterwards. I have urges to sleep through my workout, but I don't. In part because the gym that I go to, there's a fee if you sign up and don't show up. But also because, again, I understand that later I would be really pissed off that I did that. Urges are fine. Urges are commonplace. Urges to, you know, put your head out the window and scream at the person who just passed you on a double yellow line. But I don't, because there could be consequences to that that I really don't want to face. And I don't want to set that example for my kids and on and on and on. Urges are fine. They don't have any more power than I do. They have far less power than I do. They aren't a problem. And I think I talked about this very recently on an episode. Cravings are not painful. They are not harmful. They cannot hurt you. And yet, I think there was a time when I really reacted like it was a problem, like it needed my immediate attention, like it had all the power and I had none. And that's just a story. It is just a belief. And we are able to think new thoughts and formulate new beliefs. And that's why if I have a sugar craving, I don't have to get emotional about it or panicked or feel this impulsive need to act. And I've proven that I have that ability in other areas of my life, and I'm sure you have too. The other thing from a practical standpoint that I very much understand, because I've lived through this painfully so, we train our palate. With every bite of food that we put past our lips, we're training our palate. The more sweet that we eat, the more sweet that we want. If you've ever had kids before, you know how true this is. And fortunately, I realized this before I had kids because it's a big help with my kids. But I think Roman was, I don't know, close to 2 before he had any kind of processed cake or, you know, popsicle or ice cream or anything like that. And now he's 2.5, and when we give him those things, he wants more of those things, and he wants more of those things. But if we give him broccoli, he's not asking for broccoli day after day, and that's an important thing to know about your palate. The more that you give it these dopamine-inducing foods, the more that you want those foods. So I understand that it's sort of like feeding the sugar monster. I mean, it doesn't mean that monster overtakes you and you have no power, but the voice of the monster and the intensity certainly grows as you give yourself more and more and more of that. And so I just don't want to work against myself. I know that if I'm experiencing this craving, the best way, if my goal is to experience fewer cravings, then the best way to do that is to just observe the craving and note it. No big deal. Just like I might want to stay up late, or I might want to, yell at somebody on the phone on customer service. I'm just best to remain calm and not give in to that urge. The other big thing for me, and I'm always talking to my clients about learning from our history and our past, there is a tendency to judge when you perceive that you've made a mistake and get super critical. Like, I said I wasn't going to do this and I did it. I messed up. I screwed up. I failed. I blew it. I this, I that. And while I completely understand that perspective, here's another thing that is as true, if not more true, than that particular label of failure. There's information in every single choice that you make. So if you said you weren't going to have sugar, or you weren't going to have dessert, or you weren't going to have the cake, or you weren't going to have the drink, and you do, there is information in that. So I have decades of history of poor choices, of broken promises that hold really important information that if I step away from the emotion and step away from the judgment for long enough to look at it and be objective about it, that information can help me tremendously. Here's an example of what I mean by that. I know that I most often get to this place of trying to talk myself into sugar, the thoughts like, oh, you've been so good. Oh, this one thing won't hurt. You said you weren't going to have it forever. You might as well have it today. Like, today can be the day that you just say, all right, like, that was good enough. I get to that place where I want sugar the most and am most likely to talk myself into having it, or try to talk myself into having it, when I'm either tired or I'm just emotionally frazzled. So exhausted from lack of sleep, exhausted maybe because of hormones, exhausted because I've been working really hard, or my kids are taxing me. And then the feeling frazzled could be overwhelmed, could be overstimulated, but I know, I have mined that data from all of my past experiences that another version of me would have called, you know, mistakes and failures and all this other stuff. So I get to work with that information. That does not just mean if I'm tired, then I this, or if I'm feeling overwhelmed, then I this. The most important piece of knowing this about myself is strategies that are proactive, not reactive. Meaning, strategies not just about how I react when I'm tired, or how I react improving my response when I'm at my wit's end, or it's been a long day with the kids or something. It's about buffering myself from getting to that point. What kinds of things can I proactively do so that I'm not getting to that breaking point of being really tired, so that I'm not getting to that breaking point of overwhelm or at my wit's end? Couple of things that I do on the proactive side. Now, keep in mind that these are strategies I put in place for my areas of weakness. These strategies might not apply to you at all if you have different areas of weakness. Like for you, maybe it's the social trigger, and it's not having anything to do with being tired or being anxious. And for you, it has everything to do with being playful and being social. You'll need different proactive and reactive measures if your sort of weak points, if you want to call it that. I don't love that label, but just off the top of my head, we'll go with that. You'll need different proactive and reactive measures. So proactively, whenever I can, I go to bed early. It's not just, hey, we need to have strategies for when you're super tired. It's also, let's reduce the number of times in a week or in a month or in a year that you're getting to the point where you're so tired, you're telling yourself you don't care, what's the point? And you are desiring sugar from a more intense place. So whenever I can, I go to bed early. I have young kids, right? I told you guys my son is 2.5. I also have 1-year-old twin girls. So sometimes they wake up in the middle of the night. I don't have control over that. Once or twice a week, I have evening webinars that keep me up till 10 or so. And so I'm certainly not going to bed before that on those nights. But when I can, I go to bed very soon after I put my 2-year-old to bed, like within an hour. I could make a case for like, oh, I need to stay up. I need to do laundry. I need to do this. Nope. The laundry is not more important than my mental health. That might not be true for you. It is absolutely true for me. I would rather pass on the laundry and get myself to bed. I could make the case like, oh, I should really do this. I should do that. I should do this chore. I should do this work. There is nothing that is a task or a chore that is more important than my health. So for sure, I go to bed if I can. And while I absolutely love, and I mean that sincerely, I love to get up before my kids and have some time to myself, not just to like sit and drink coffee in peace, though that's certainly nice, but more to get a jump on the day and get a few things done. I take 1 or 2 days a week, usually the day after an evening webinar or on a Sunday, where I sleep until they get up, which is a couple hours after I normally would get up. Then on the reactive part of being tired, if I notice that I am more short-tempered or I'm yawning and I feel like at 4:30 I want to take a nap, instead of having a snack, the things that I do are I get outside, fresh air, even if it's freezing cold outside, move my body, go for a walk, drink more water. Those are things that truly give me an energy boost versus things like caffeine or sugar, which might give me a temporary boost, but then I'm going to fall off a cliff afterwards. So for me, I know that if I can get some sunshine, even if it's not warm, some fresh air, even if it's not sunny, even if it's freezing cold, go for a walk, even if it's on my treadmill, and hydrate with water, that is going to do wonders for my energy. The other thing, proactively, for knowing that my weaker points are when I'm tired, here's the thing. The cleaner I eat, the more energy I have. And the less clean I eat, the less energy I have. So if I'm feeling exhausted, and that's why I recognize this internal dialogue around like, what's the point? You've been so good, blah, blah, blah. If the problem is low energy, the solution is not sugar. Like for sure, undeniably not the solution. For the other part of this for me, which is feeling frazzled, stressed, over-emotional, it's 90% mindset, which is perspective and prayer. Those things go hand in hand for me. 5% organization and planning, kind of having my shit together, and 5% asking for help. Now, you can't just implement these things when you recognize you're at the end of the rope. They have to be proactive. You don't want to just practice perspective when you're losing your mind. That's like the worst time to practice, right? So you want to practice all the time so that when you need it most, it's there and it's readily accessible for you. I start when I get just a little frustrated with my kids, long before I'm at the point of like, I'm going to lose it. Everybody needs to be quiet right now. The littlest bit frustrated, I practice. Here are a couple of different ways that can look for me. And of course, this reflects the fact that my kids are 2 and 1. but I play with them instead of trying to control the way they're playing. Now, obviously, again, this is because they're very young. I've got 2 1-year-olds and a 2-year-old. And so inevitably, my 2-year-old will be trying to do something and the 1-year-olds will be trying to tear it down, take it apart, break it up. And I will notice myself getting frustrated that they're pushing him and he's hitting them. And in that moment, one of the ways that I practice is trying to play with them instead of trying to control the way they're playing. It's just an energy shift. Even if it changes nothing in terms of their behavior, it changes my experience of the situation. Another thing, and a girlfriend of this suggested this for me, and you may or may not be the praying type, but even if you're not, it can be a gratitude practice. So when, for example, one of my 1-year-olds, she's aggressive. I mean, she just wants to body check and she is just full throttle all the time. And while sometimes it's adorable, sometimes it's really annoying and sometimes it's really dangerous and it's hard to control because she's 1 and discipline is not exactly landing on a perfectly cognitive brain for her at this stage. So what I do is I give thanks for specific personality traits of my kids, specifically the kid that's annoying me, frustrating me, getting on my nerves. Don't get me wrong. I adore my kids, but, and I'm sure all parents can relate to this, especially those who are home with their kids all day long, as I am. If Charlie is pressing my buttons and getting on my nerves, I will specifically, sometimes out loud, sometimes in my own mind, depending on how loud things are, they're often very loud, I will thank God for specific personality traits. So I'll just kind of go through like, thank you, God, for giving Charlie this energy. Thank you, God, for giving Charlie a spirit of adventure and a passion. And I will just list out anything that comes to my mind. If Roman is oftentimes in the car, it'll just be like nonstop, not just the questions, but he wants his foot in his sister's face. And as soon as I notice that I'm starting to get irritated, I will, again, sometimes out loud, sometimes just to myself in my own mind, I will just thank God for specific traits of his. And it's just a perspective shift. Now, again, don't wait till you're at the end of the rope to practice any of these. So I play with them instead of trying to control their play, pray for specific personality, the traits they have, or I just try to shift to a more structured activity. It usually does not work for them at all, but it's a way for me to have a pattern interrupt so that I don't just feed into building frustration and building frustration. I do this with my work too. As soon as I start to get a tiny bit overwhelmed, and again, this is related to sugar because I know for me that if I get to the place where I'm at the end of my rope, which without intervention would happen pretty often, I want sugar and I'm more likely to talk myself into it. So when I notice that I'm starting to get even the least bit overwhelmed with my work, I practice. For example, tech stuff frustrates me. As I've shared with you before, and I should do a longer episode on this idea of a minimalist business, I used to have a big team for a small business, not a big team for a big business, but a big team for a small business. And since I've had kids, it's basically to the point where I have no team. Of course, my husband helps, but none of the team that I used to have. And so all of the tech stuff that I used to just message somebody and they'd handle is on me. And I can get very frustrated with technology very quickly. So as soon as I start to get frustrated, I'll practice something. Right now, I'm trying to build out something in a new way that I've never done before. And if I run into something I can't figure out, I'll very quickly be like, oh, shoot. And as soon as I recognize that, I'll practice changing my perspective. This is what it feels like to learn something new. And on the other side of figuring this out, I'm going to have a skill that I didn't have before. And I'm going to put in the work that's required to have another tool in my toolbox. So instead of feeling like, ah, really? I thought it was going to work and it doesn't work. Can I be curious and determined and excited to get to the other side of figuring it out instead of being somebody who gets irritated? Or another thing for me, which is really fascinating or troublesome, however you want to see it, because I have young kids. If my kitchen is a mess or really any part of my house, I start to feel overwhelmed. And I just don't like that at all. So when I first notice it, before it builds and builds and builds into an explosion, I practice these things. Again, you don't want to wait till you're at the end of your rope. Please do not wait. You got to practice before it gets to that point. What I'll use here is often the perspective of, hey, if your bar is this low for things to ruffle your feathers, you've basically decided that your feathers are going to be ruffled all the time for the rest of your life. I don't know about you, but I don't want to live that way, right? If I have such a low bar, and I tease my husband about this all the time because he gets very aggravated very easily, and I'll always be like, oh, did that trip your trigger? And it's my way of kind of lightening up the mood or whatever, but I don't love that his bar is so low, but here I am getting irritated over stuff on the counter. I mean, stuff on the counter is enough for me to get irritated like that. That is a low, low, low bar. And so I just don't want to be the kind of person who gets rocked, even in a small way, over something that's just so silly. So I use that as an opportunity to be like, honey, raise a bar. You gotta have a higher threshold for irritation than shit on the counter, you know? So I practice that before it gets to a boiling point. Or sometimes I'll just be like, okay, 5 minutes. Let's emotionally neutral, not like a tornado, all huffy puffy, pissed off. 5 minutes, how far can we get in 5 minutes? And then be done, like be done, take a break, go put your feet up, like play with your kids. 5 minutes, how much can you get done in 5 minutes? And often that just kind of brings me back to reality. Another thing that I ask myself in my work and most often in my home is, what can I do that will make this easier in general, not right now? Because sometimes it feels like I'm doing the same work over and over and over again. I'm picking up the same toys 3 times a day. What can I do to make this easier moving forward? And that's a prompt for me to like, time to donate some stuff, time to pack up some stuff, time to give some stuff to some friends, time to bring some stuff out to the burn pile in the yard. And I'm always looking for what can make this easier, not just today, but long term. Our mudroom. Oh my God, if anybody is listening to this who's been to our house, I'm so sorry. Our mudroom is always just disastrous. And it's one of those things that I'll go in there and I'm trying to find something and it's just not easy to find because it's a disaster. And that is a prompt for me to say, how can I make this easier for myself moving forward? Is there stuff here that hasn't been touched in the last 6 weeks? Okay, let's find it a permanent home. Is there stuff in here that's out of season or that doesn't fit the kids anymore? Because that's often what it is. Like, this is a coat that they don't wear anymore. These are shoes that are from last season. And so I look not just to deal with things once, but to deal with things in a way that I don't have to keep coming back and doing the same work over and over and over and over. This is a huge thing in business. If I get the same question 3 times, then what can I do to make it easier to handle that question next time? Do I need to put something on my website? Do I need to put something on social media? When Morgan and I were building out Strong Foundations, that was a big thing for us. Hey, if we get the same question more than twice, let's incorporate it in some way. Not only does that provide a better experience for our clients, but it also makes life easier for us and we deliver a better product. It saves us time moving forward. And so that same philosophy that makes so much sense in business can and should be applied to our lives. One of the things that I started doing when I was like, hey, all right, if this is tripping my trigger all the time, what can I do to make it easier long term? I started using a laundry service. I know it sounds super bougie, but for me and for my family in this season of life, it's making sense to have this pickup drop off laundry thing where I put the laundry outside the door and 24 hours later, it's back, it's clean, it's folded. I rehired our cleaning ladies. we had let them go because with the twins and their erratic nap schedules, it was just too impossible to figure out a good time to have four people clanging around with vacuums. But now that everybody's on a schedule, it's just one thing that makes me feel more at ease about the floors and the counters and the toilets and the this and the that. So there are things that we can do, some that are totally free and others that are not, that can make things easier, not just once, but moving forward. Now, sometimes it's not that I'm upset. It's not that I'm overstimulated or overwhelmed or overtired. It's just I want to indulge. And there are a couple of approaches. It kind of depends on where I'm at and how I want to navigate the situation, which a lot of that comes from my energy and my emotional bandwidth. But what could I have that's indulgent and still aligned with how I want to feel energetically, still aligned with my goals, still aligned with my daily action items? One of the things that I've done a handful of times over the last few months without sugar is, have you ever heard of Element? I think I've mentioned it before. I know I've mentioned it in Strong Foundations. It's basically an electrolyte packet that doesn't have sugar. And they have a flavor pack that is like, they call it chocolate medley. Like some of them are chocolate chai, some of them are chocolate mint, some of them are chocolate raspberry, but it's salt and different electrolytes and of course some flavoring. And I'll put like a quarter of a packet in a cup of hot water and it's hot cocoa-esque. So I'm getting something that is sweet, but it's still aligned. Other times it might be frozen fruit. Now I don't like to turn to food if I'm not hungry, but sometimes I'm also hungry. So that's a good solution at that point in time. I feel like food is only a solution if hunger is the problem. But we always have frozen mango on hand because it's the kid's favorite. And sometimes I'll put a little heavy cream on it. I do try to have this immediately following a meal, not like 3 or 4 hours after dinner and I'm just feeling snacky. And that is not only because I prefer to have as big a gap as possible between dinner and breakfast, but also because if you're having it close to a dinner time meal where you've had protein, where you've had fat, it's not going to impact your blood sugar as much as if you're having it more or less on an empty stomach a few hours later. And the blood sugar thing is not only a health factor, but it's also a cravings factor. If you have more of a rise in blood sugar, you can expect more compensatory cravings afterwards. So I always think of it as like part of the meal, not a couple hours later, I'm prowling through the fridge and looking for something. So that's something I'll do every once in a while. The other thing is that it doesn't have to be sweet related. If I'm wanting to indulge, maybe I cook a meal that feels more indulgent, like a steak, or it feels indulgent to me to order out, even if I'm getting chicken kebabs from my favorite Greek restaurant. It's not that I'm having an ice cream, but it feels indulgent to have somebody else prepare the meal. I don't have to worry about wrangling the kids while I'm trying to cook. Nobody has to worry about cleaning up. So sometimes the indulgent thing is still a meal that's very much aligned, still something that doesn't involve anything sweet, but it is in fact indulgent. The Greek restaurant near me, I can do kebabs there very easily, or they have these fire roasted wings that are not like breaded or fried or anything like that. That feels very indulgent. If I were at a place where I were having sugar, which as of today, I'm not, I'd rather make my own ice cream than buy ice cream. You can get an ice cream maker on the cheap. You can probably find one on Facebook Marketplace from somebody who's trying to make more space in their pantry and they've never used theirs before, or they've only used it once in the last 5 years. But I'll put in very, very little sugar compared to what you would find in the grocery store. And the other thing is, I don't love the texture after it's been frozen in the freezer. So I make just a little, enough to give the kids some and my husband some and I have some, and then it's gone. And there's not artificial ingredients or preservatives or all of this other stuff. And I'm not left with a gallon of like cookie dough ice cream in the freezer later. So those are some things that really, really work for me. What seems most significant in my consistency is knowing what are the factors that make me start to waver in my commitment, and then having proactive, not reactive. I mean, you can have reactive strategies as well, like, you know, ordering out, because that feels more indulgent than instead eating the meal you didn't want and then binging through ice cream. But more importantly, proactive strategies before you get to the breaking point, before you're at the point of, I don't care, it doesn't matter. Proactive strategies that you learn from your own history, what brings you to that point long before you get there, you're practicing different things that keep you from getting to that cliff. So hope this episode gave you a couple of things you might try. Let me know if there was any one thing that resonated more with others. Of course, as always, if you have questions, if there's something I mentioned that you want me to go further into, I'm always more than happy to do that. Just let me know, and I will see you tomorrow.
The drive to go further and reach higher. The same thing that inspires you inspires us. At Strayer University, we're always searching for new ways to make education more affordable. That's why we offer access to up to 10 no-cost gen ed courses to help you save time and money so you can keep striving. Visit strayer.edu to learn more. No-cost gen ed provided by Strayer University affiliate Sophia Learning. Eligibility rules apply. Connect with us for details. Strayer University is certified to operate in Virginia by CHEV.